We've been reading from St. Paul's letter to the Philippians. Yesterday, St. Paul compared his former life to his new Christian life. Remember, he said he was like a super Pharisee, fulfilled all the requirements of the law. And then he says, but that's all worthless now. All that I used to establish myself as a worthy person, it's worthless. Nothing is greater than knowing Jesus Christ. So he made that comparison yesterday between his old self and his new self. In today's reading, he makes a different comparison, this time between himself and others who are on the path to destruction, what he calls enemies of the cross of Christ. And he says, imitate me. Imitate me and imitate those who imitate me. He sets himself up as a model, which sounds to us like a very arrogant thing to say, imitate me. Instead of pointing to Christ, he points to himself. And then he says, and don't imitate those people who are on the path to destruction. They're those whose God is their stomach and their glory is their shame and whose minds are occupied with earthly things. So what's going on here? When a person says, imitate me, they're either really arrogant or they're really humble. Because if they're just full of themselves and boasting, as we see so often in media, well, that's just arrogance. It's very distasteful. But a genuinely humble person who knows he's on the right path and has something to offer could also say, imitate me. This is the right way to live. Last week we celebrated All Saints Day. We celebrated everybody who is in glory, everybody who's sharing in the victory. And if you ask any one of those people, any one of the saints, should I imitate you? They would all say, yes, imitate me. Not imitate my sin or any ways I failed, but imitate the path that led me to this great glory. And every one of them would say that. Yeah, this is the way. Now, we're used to imitating or striving to imitate the saints in glory. We're not that used to hearing people who are still in this world say that. But that's what Paul says. Why does he say it? Because he's so concerned that the other direction, which is so destructive, is attracting people or distracting people. He says, I keep telling you this. I'm saying it now with tears in my eyes. Don't go this way. Don't become an enemy of the cross of Christ. And then he says, look at what's going to happen. You know, if you follow this way, this way of Jesus Christ, this way that I'm following, what's going to happen is that God is going to do something extraordinary. So you see what he does. He takes the focus off himself. After he's saying, imitate me, then he says, look what's going to happen. God is going to change us. He's going to change this lowly body to conform with his glorified body. God is the one who glorifies us. We don't do it ourselves. God is the one who transforms us in his likeness. And that's what we celebrate. That's what I want you to do, Paul says. That's what I want to have happen to you, that you be transformed in glory. And that's what he says, imitate me. So after setting up this contrast between Paul's way and the destructive way, we turn to this puzzling parable of the dishonest steward, who is clearly someone you would not imitate and you wouldn't hold up for imitation. But this is the surprise in the parable, right? Jesus holds him up as an example. Let's look at this parable. There's a rich man whose steward is reported for squandering his property. Now, squandering means wasting, right? I don't know if that implies that he was just incompetent and he couldn't do his job right, or if he was really stealing from the master. I'm not sure. Later in the parable, Jesus refers to him as the dishonest steward. So is it his dishonesty that is causing him to squander his master's property? Because squandering is just like letting it go to waste, whereas If it was just dishonesty and he was stealing, he would be taking it for himself. Now, I don't know. But either way, he's not a good steward and he's going to lose his job. Now, we just, if you're reading from Luke's Gospel, the previous chapter is the three parables of mercy. The lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. And the greatest one is the lost son, the prodigal son. In that parable, the one that comes immediately before this parable, the son who squandered his father's property goes back humbly saying, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, just hire me and I'll work. And the father embraces him and gives him the best possible reception. So after hearing that parable, it's as if we're set up to expect this steward to humbly go to his master and say, I'm no longer worthy to be your steward, or maybe you could just hire me to do some lowly job. I can't dig ditches. I'm ashamed to beg. Please. But that's not what happens. You said that the pattern that we saw in the previous parables is not followed here. No. Instead, the steward takes things into his own hands and he changes the receipts of his master's debtors. Now we see why we call him a dishonest steward. He's changing the accounts. Seems like he's making things worse. If his master is already accusing him of squandering his property and is about to fire him, what's he going to do now that he's changing the accounts? Now, the standard explanation for this is that the steward is giving up his commission. He's reducing his own profit to benefit the debtors so that they will like him, and when he loses his job, maybe they will hire him. Now that's the standard explanation, and maybe that's the case. But the point of the parable, and this is what Jesus points to here, the point of the parable is that this man acted prudently. This is the surprise. Instead of saying, this guy's worse than I thought, or get out of here if you're going to, you know, make friends with all those who owe me, well then just get out. He commends this dishonest steward for acting prudently. So the lesson here is not about acting dishonestly or squandering anybody's property. The lesson here, the focus of Jesus here, is acting prudently. Acting prudently. Acting for our spiritual life the way worldly people act for their worldly life. That's the lesson. Now, worldly people, and Paul describes them very well, worldly people, their God is their stomach, their glory is in their shame, and their minds are occupied with earthly things. And so they dedicate themselves to earthly things, pleasure, advantage of all sorts, power, money, possessions. What can we learn from worldly people? Well, dedicate our energies to the spiritual life, to our spiritual future, the way these people dedicate themselves to their earthly life. Paul says, our citizenship is in heaven. Our citizenship is heaven. So that's where we belong. That's what we should be focused on. That's what we should be dedicating our energies to and our possessions to. That's what the point of the parable is. The children of this world, the children who are focused on this world, are more prudent in dealing with their own generation than the children of light. Okay, let's go back to the example of Paul. Paul, who had all this advantage in the Jewish system of law, he gives it all up. So that's not going to get me anywhere. If I'm going to be prudent, I'm going to put all my trust in Jesus Christ. I'm going to find my treasure in the salvation won for me by Jesus Christ. He's being prudent in doing that, right? He's no longer putting his trust in worldly things. He's acting like a good steward. What has been entrusted to me is the gospel, and that's what I'm going to use. And that's what I'm going to tell everyone else to use, imitate me, in order to enter into salvation. So that's, I think, how we can deal with this surprising parable. Now, one last thought about this that came to me as I was reflecting. The steward, once he knows he's going to lose his job, he sits down and he considers the reality he's facing. And that's a very good thing. The reason why it came to mind is because I know you probably don't follow these things very closely, but in the United States, there was a big election this week. And of course, before an election, it's a two-party system there. So both sides are claiming they're the greatest and they're going to win and great confidence and blah, blah, blah. And that's the way campaigning is, right? Everybody's showing claiming how great they are. But after the election, it was clear one party came out the victor and one party came out the loser. And the victors, they keep boasting and saying how great they are. But the losers, and this is, I think, very refreshing, they say, what happened? What went wrong? And they take an honest look at their situation and say, well, we thought this was going to lead to victory, and it didn't. We thought this would work. We thought we had the best candidates and best party platform, but it didn't. So now what? Now what's our situation? It's very much like this steward who says, now what do I do? This is the reality I'm facing. Now what do I do? And that's very refreshing. It's terrible when people don't face reality. And, you know, this often happens with elections. People say, I didn't lose, I was cheated, and this went, you know, the system is crooked, and so-and-so is a bad person, and I should have won. And that's a kind of denial of the reality, and it doesn't really help. What's really helpful is to take a good, honest, ruthless look at the reality, because then we can make prudent decisions. What do we do now, given this is our situation? Well, the real situation of our life in the world is we're in a fallen world, we have a fallen nature, we have weakness, we can't accomplish the great things we want in this world, and we certainly can't work our way into heaven. That's the reality of it. So what do we do now? Well, we don't put all our trust in ourselves, and we don't focus on what we can accomplish. We put our focus on Jesus Christ, faith in Jesus Christ, allowing his great power to work in us, for us, through us. That's what we do. That's a good, honest way of recognizing the situation we're in and that we're going to lose if we keep going that way. So we want to win. If you want to win, you have to follow the winner, and that's Jesus Christ. So let us be more prudent in our dealings with this world. Not putting our trust in this world. It's going to pass away anyway. Popular acclaim is going to pass away anyway. What really lasts is Jesus Christ. Divine love, divine mercy, divine power. And that's where we put our trust, that's where we have all our hope.